relationships to connections with humanity. One third dating insights, one third self-love. We will be continuing with our and tonight will be hosted by myself, Tamara, and Adam Mose to share a little bit about what our listeners will be hearing about.
About the intoxic we occasionally subject ourselves to, lasting and meaningful relationships, and putting the whole species like in towards the next generation.
Of discussion and philosophical pondering to the conversation, we always love to hear from who's listened for. 895-1114.
And I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you with a lie. And what you say or do, I'm only just beginning to see. And sometimes when it stays too much in high, till we both break down and feel the fear in me subside. Leaves me battling with my pride already. Some tenderness survived. Rider, still trapped, hesitant prize fighter. Sometimes when we touch, the honesty's to my eyes and high. Till I die, till we both wanna hold you, till the fear. At times I'd lie you to your knees through and hold you in. At times I am hard to try. I've watched love pass. Think we're drifters, still searching brother or sister. But then the passion flares again. And sometimes when we touch too much, and I hide and hide, I wanna hold you till break down and cry.
Welcome back.
So we are going to get ship facilitated by Mr. Adam Mose. And again, if you feel like you have at any point something you'd like to add to the conversation, go ahead and give us a call, 895-1114.
So first we're thinking, oh, relationship is like whatever we're relating with, whoever we're relating with. And we can even say, oh, the primary relationship, you on you, getting that to a loving space. You know, we had a whole series earlier on self-love. And we're saying that's like the basis. You got to have an ongoing at the same time. You know, self-care, positive self-regard, and the health that way. And even when you're in relationship, that's still, you know, it's good to be able to take that priority and be able to give to yourself what you need to stay beautiful and strong and giving in the relationship. And then, you know, it's unbelievable for those who are in our local broadcast area. You can feel what's going on outside. Like, this is why we love living in the Central Valley. We have a little hard winter, little kind of a little dieback. Everything goes dormant and hibernates. And then days like this, you're like, wow, yeah. Glorious to be alive. And all of nature is ready to go at it again for another summer of fun. Woo! So springtime is just, it's just beautiful time to be talking and thinking about relationships, romance. And my portion of it, you know, the further ideal of partnership, the difference between relationship and partnership it's a philosophical one, perhaps, but it really makes the difference. It's like why I was serially monogamous, you know, most of my adult life since I started dating, whatever that was called, dating. And then, bam, when I was ready to, we didn't settle down. We were settling up. We want to settle up. When we finally settled up, then there was something that happened that was different. There's like, oh, this is something different. It's not just a relationship, it's a partnership. And what that means and how that's negotiated within you, I think. Because last episode, when you were with us, we discussed the 6-in-1. And if you remember any of that, then you know about the my culture myself, part of my society, myself, my culture myself is a part of who we think we are as our identity. But a lot of what goes down for marriage, you know, and you think of partnership, you think of marriage, but it's different. Like the social and cultural norms for what it means to be married wasn't what I was into. And fortunately, my wife, you know, future wife, wasn't into it either. So we did our own kind of vows and created our own kind of partnership in which all of that, every bit of it is negotiable. It was so amazing. The vows that we use, when you think of vows, you know, it's like a commitment that you make to yourself. And as long as you maintain it, there's some power, there's some energy that happens in the maintenance of the vow. And some people think, oh, it's a limitation. You know, you're like, I vow not to do this and that or whatever. But it's different in the sense of, you know, it depends on the content of your vow. And we might be jumping ahead. We're still kind of, you know, relationship. How the heck do we get there? I'm very shy. I even have a hard time meeting new people, you know. How can this be coming beyond that and get to relationship? Or I'm way too young. The ideal of partnership and marriage and all that stuff, I didn't consider it till my late 20s, early 30s. So there was a whole lot of extra growing and experiencing and heartbreaking and learning that happened, you know, as a precursor to that, which is all fair game for relationship counsel and talk. And it's wonderful. Okay. I'm a romantic. I'm disclosing. I'm very much for the trials and tribulations and the agony and the ecstasy of looking, finding, falling, hurting, you know, all of that, loving, glorious. And on a spring day like today, it's easy to just come out in favor of love. So if you're on the fence about it and you think you might hurt yourself, what the heck, just go past your comfort zone a little bit and be open to the possibility of experiencing what love is like, because it's glorious. And wow, that was a lot. I didn't mean to go on that much.
It was interesting what you said about the romantic in you being inclined and interested and attracted to like the falls as well as the fall, like the falling in love as well as the falling out of love, mm-hmm. the heartbreak, mm-hmm. because I often find that falling out of love is less identified with the romantic,
right?
As you just put it together, so
yeah, it's part of it,
right? It's an interesting look at that. And some, what you mentioned something about dating, and Yeah, it's like thinking about my own experience and dating and like starting in to date when I was younger. It's like I never really understood what is dating, what's not dating.
Right.
You know, like our society is very vague about, you know, like other people can almost tell you better if you're dating someone.
Right.
Than maybe you
I didn't know.
Know
I was in that relationship. You're right.
Yes.
But yeah, instead of dating, I'm more into mating.
Yep. Then all, what you were saying about the seasons, it was reminding me something that Julian had said before on one of the shows about like seasonal dating. Mm. Like that there's kind of this culture, maybe like a subversive more than aversive or overt culture that the people date kind of like seasonally, where like they break up in the spring or break up like in the late winter.
Mm-hmm.
And because everybody's like going to be out in the spring and having fun. And
right. There's some ancient
ideas, you know.
There's some ancient,
are just sort of looking and pursuing. And then towards like the fall and the winter is sort of when people.
We got to shack up and keep each other warm.
Exactly.
I've got to make it through another winter.
Exactly. Found the humor in that. I'd never heard that before. He had brought that up.
Well, they also have these like Burning Man divorces. You like go solo, yeah. Show up at Burning Man, and then you leave, and oh, we're back together again. Okay.
Ah, interesting.
But don't quote me on that. That's just like what I've heard.
Right.
I've never practiced that.
Yeah. There's lots of different ideas out there.
And if you'd like to share yours with us, we're open to hearing from you all out there.
Yes.
And the serial monogamy is usually how, the relationships transpired, and I just happened to have this spiritual friend, a very dear teacher who was super real, super raw, and was very interested in a way like shepherding relationships. He was married. He had been married a number of times. I think he was with his fifth wife. He had 13 kids.
Wow.
Obviously, he was serious about this stuff. But all of his other students and friends were also in committed relationships with kids. And I was the oddball 20-something. And it was his vows that he gave, part of this big care package, that got my wife and I together. And he had given me the 6-in-1 as an exercise, and I had, applied myself to it for a number of years, and felt that I had gleaned some sort of insight into my own limitations and my own biases, that in a way had set me up for some major disasters in love and in relationships earlier, before I had that as a care package. In a way, we come to relationship, it seems like there's just two people, ba-da! And that's what it is. It's so exciting, it's like liberating. We're all done with all that family of origin craziness. But then when you're like, let's go take it further and go into the partnership part of it, then all of that family of origin stuff becomes really important, and just having great sex
doesn't necessarily
it's important. It right. Definitely it gets you so far, and then you got to talk about something afterwards.
Or the other times, fill in the rest of the space of your life, the other things that come up. So I'm curious, in your perspective, how it transitions from relationship to partnership.
Yeah.
Because often people have, from my experience in life, there's a challenge to maintaining that relating to one another person.
Right. Well, this was perhaps part of the secret Okay, we'll tell you guys the secret. Relationships are like minds, like your own mind. And they're also like bicycles. Okay, the three of them. Relationships, minds, and bicycles are similar.
Wow.
Here's the big secret. They all balance easier with forward momentum. When I was learning to ride the bike, I'm like, how the heck? It's just two little wheels. What's going on? But then when you get going with it, then it's like, wow, yeah, there's a lot of freedom. With your own development, with your own mind, you know, like when you have a trajectory, you have something you're working towards. It might be stressful in the getting there, but it's more balancing. You have some inner guidance when you're going for something. And when I'm just dating to do my thing and date and like have a fun time, and after we're past that, we're like, okay, what the heck now? You know, we're all terrified of each other's inner demons. Let's go. But the joke, the weird thing is, like, if we're like, okay, where do we take this next? Whoa, partnership. And there's this whole other thing possible. Then it's like we're in it together, and we're going to have to work through our stuff. Our stuff is going to come up, and we're not just going to run away from it. We might. We might try.
We might run away together.
Little history. I mean, we did. We eloped in a way. We did run away, my wife and I. And but then what we're finding in each other and having to work through in ourselves, that's what you can't run away from. And when you don't, then genuine development, genuine work happens. Mm-hmm. And the work works. You get the benefits of the work that you do. It only comes back to you. And you take that, you know, even if that relationship doesn't, that relationship come partnership doesn't even work, then you still get the benefits of that work.
So when I was making the reference to running away, I was referring to as people that run away from their problems together in partnership. I think that occurs at times. You're shaking your head, you
don't? I don't recommend it.
I don't recommend it either. I'm just saying that that's also a reality that happens in partnership.
Right.
And
right.
If people aren't necessarily ready to do their own personal growth, we also manifest and find relationships that allow us to be where we're at.
But I mean, the roughest example of that is like, you know, yeah, I got to get away from my crazy family, so I married this guy. You know,
right?
That's not going to be. It could work. Who knows? You know,
right.
But it doesn't necessarily set you up for success that way.
Yes, agreed.
But from the dharmic perspective, we're talking Buddhism, the philosophical thing. No self, no problem. The illusion of a separate me, myself, and I entity is the birthplace of all of our biases and projections and overlays that we lay on other people and other trips, and that's a source of endless problems. So when we mean self-love, it's like, yeah, the relative self, the personality who we think we are, we want to be feeling good about that. But ultimately, that's not the be-all, end-all of who you are. You know, who each of us is goes beyond reason, goes beyond belief. It is vastness, and that is the Dharma. That's what the Buddha discovered. So that's my philosophical orientation. And a lot of people get it wrong. They think, oh yeah, Buddha said no desire. You know, you can't have any attachment. You know, and on the Hinayana level, the early school of Buddhism, everyone is monks and nuns. If you're really serious practitioner, you know, they support the renunciate sangha who don't have to deal with all this relationship craziness. And glory and delight. But if we're understanding about the real nature of things, the interconnectedness of everything, and the open-endedness, the openness that's possible within your own being, within your own mind, perceptions, then relationship, love, all that stuff is very important. It's very important to it's a whole other path, the householder path in the Dharma is about loving everybody. Loving in a very open, generous, non-biased way. That's it's best practiced in committed relationship, you know. That's the nearest, closest example of how I can love another. So what better way to practice spiritual path, you know, that includes the generation of loving kindness and compassion than, you know, in committed partnership. That's the vision.
A beautiful one indeed. I think about my own personal experience and how I was not in a relationship for a good amount of time, probably when I was going to Chico State and getting my bachelor's in social work. I didn't seem to want to or have the ability to make time in my life to be in a relationship. And at the time, it seemed I was really happy just doing my own thing. And at some point, I consciously decided I wanted to be in a relationship. And it was so interesting because there was a part of me that felt so like I had achieved so much, kind of like internal personal growth before going back in pursuit of like the relationship path, and how much more came out and showed me that I had not done some levels of work whatsoever on other things because I was so affected by the reflection that I was getting back. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely been my personal belief that we learn so much in partnership. Yep. Whether that's intimate partnership, you know, family, friends, but just the people that we choose to bring in our life and really seeing them as our true reflection.
Exactly.
And seeing as what areas we'd like to be able to show up a bit more for in ourselves.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's so right. It's like that.
Not always so pleasant, but the glory you said and the benefit of what you gain in the end, it ends up being always so worth it.
Yep. And sometimes you have kids, and then the kids is just a whole other awesomeness layer. Like, it really is to have partnership and to show that to kids and have the kids, you know, be able to reference that. It's the most amazing. Anyway, it goes on and on. There's so many facets of love and relationship and partnership and family. See, it all connects. I mean, we were talking about family last time, but it's the family of your co-creation.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from the partnership. And I mean, going right down to it, we're saying it was like you might remember my story, but it's something. It's like, okay, don't try this at home, kids. But I met my wife, and then 2 weeks later, we were married. We got married. And we didn't know that much about each other, you know, in the classical sense. It was like an old-fashioned marriage, how parents would, you know, say, okay, you two get married. And then you have, hopefully, like a lifetime of getting to know each other and falling in love. We had fallen in love. But we really didn't know what was about, you know, and there just seemed to be this inner connection and rightness and knowing, and it was like, blast off, let's do it. So that sort of stuff happens, but as the first time I ever imagined something like that working. So yeah, 20 years later, we're gonna celebrate our 20th anniversary this June. And there's been a lot of changes and challenges and glories along the way. It's still ongoing. We're still a work in progress. That's the wonderful thing. We haven't arrived, you know, we're still settling up. There's always room for improvement.
I like that reference, settling up. I like it. I'm going to use that one instead of settling down. I never really liked that, settling down, like to settle.
Settled, being settled is nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a movement oriented person.
Right,
so
right.
To settle anything is sort of like
yeah.
But I'm sleeping.
But there's this, the meditation thing is like settling your mind.
Mm.
And there's a lot of advantages to that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I'm really enjoying my meditative process nowadays. And finding that it makes so much difference in my day, the timing, everything seems to work. Okay, this is just my experience again. But a day without meditation, there's some weird timing, like I can't catch up with myself. My timing is going ahead. So the joke is like, you know, oh, you should meditate half an hour a day. And if you can't find time to meditate for half an hour, then you should meditate for an hour a day. But it's like that. When I have settled my mind, it seems to be working more optimally. And that it affects my experience of time. So things happen more on time. Okay, maybe, you know, I look at my watch more and I'm actually arriving, you know, in a timely way. But it's even more subjective than that. So segue into the mind, into the self-love part of it is, you know, even in the relationship, in the partnership, you're still giving each other space to do the individual development. And this was something amazing that my dear spiritual friend Fritz told me. He was saying like, oh, what happens in a partnership? You are the caretaker of the other's solitude.
Mm.
What? Like, oh no, if you're in a relationship, that means you're no longer lonely. I want to be in a relationship, so I'm not going to be alone. We're alone. Each one of us, you know, we have our thoughts and our mind and our experience. That's us. That's up to us. We have to deal with that. We're born naked and alone, and we'll leave the same way. When you die, it's just one person. You've got to deal you on you. So why would partnership relationship be any different? There's a lot we give each other and we exchange with each other and we negotiate with each other and you know, the bonding, the sense of bonding that you have with the other, so important, so beautiful, that we don't deny that. And at the same time, we make the spaces, we make the times for each other to continue going forward on our paths, you know. And it was really remarkable, you know, that my wife and I were able to see that, acknowledge that within one another from the get-go, and in a way even challenge each other. You know, she's awesome. She's just going ahead and trying new things and becoming more, you know, of who she wants to be. And I'm like, wow, you go, girl. And occasionally she does that for me, but
important to have a partnership, though, that you both see one another as, you know, as something as light and something that's growing and inspiring and inspiring you as well.
Yeah. And this was not necessarily modeled to us by our parents. That's the thing. That there were beautiful things, you know, characteristics that we got from our family of origin. And this is kind of weird and unique, but like, and it's a joke, there's like two Jewish middle-class families in LA that stayed together through the 70s and the 80s. All of the other ones divorced. Her parents and my parents. So that might be part of it. You know, I saw my folks committed. She saw her folks committed. So that's something odd that statistically I know isn't out there a lot. But, you know, they were of their generation, my folks, her folks, and had to work within their limitations that they had, you know, for what partnership was for them. And that's what I saw, you know. And when we were getting together and we said we want to envision something greater, it's like, oh, where the heck, how do we model that? Where does it come from? And we got, you know, I have a little bit of input from spiritual friends and guides who are in partnerships. Actually, most of my spiritual mentors were in relationship, in partnerships. And so through that, I saw that, you know, you can be on the path and in a committed relationship. They're very much simpatico. But in terms of the, like, programming, like, what comes out automatically and easily in the department of the emotions, right? That is where the work has to happen. And culturally and socially, we excavate that, you know, in the process of meditation. That stuff comes out. It's not just when you're like, oh, I'm going to quiet my mind. It's anything but. You're saying you like movement. There's an aspect of the mind which is total movement, always active. This thought, that thought, next thought, up it comes, you know. I was like not even wanting to remember that 1980s commercial jingle, and off it goes, you know. It's like these tapes that run. And that's like one of the big first discoveries of meditation. You're like, oh, it seems like this meditation isn't working for me. When I sit down, my mind is so much more noisy, talkative, full of the stuff, you know, that I thought I was going to find peace. And it's like, actually, you're just becoming aware of it. You know, that's been going on as this kind of noise in the background. You know, it's like what we thought. The thought process is like when I think that I'm thinking independently and autonomously. But when you meditate, you see mind is just thinking all the time. And then later on, you're like, oh, that's a good thought. That's a good one. You know, I'm just identifying and they're coming up. And how to really work with the nuts and bolts ideation, it doesn't get good until there's this recognition of the background noise, the movement, and the capacity to give it some rest. Give it a break. Give yourself a big break, man.
Absolutely. And I can identify that with my meditative process in terms of all the things that I seemingly need to do come up first, or things that I have the idea, and then it takes a little while before it sort of settles into nothing else there and just kind of letting the thoughts go.
Yeah, the content of them doesn't compel me. Is like the thoughts are still going to keep coming. Minds think, that's what they do. But it's like instead of stopping every train that goes by and rummaging through each boxcar. You know, I just watch the train go by.
No attachment to the train.
The train of thought. It just goes by.
In terms of the partnership and relationship, so you've been married now for 20 years. You're celebrating in June. Have you found things that have worked in your relationship more so than others that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, heck yeah. First, we were saying it's like this, some common ground. You know, we have some shared beliefs. We have some shared goals. You know, we met and we knew we wanted kids. And that was major, you know, just to be like, yeah, let's make a family. But, and then just checking, oh yeah, we're pretty stable. We're all, you know, there's no substance abuse. We're just all here, ready for whatever's going to happen. That was a good one. Checking that out first, you know, in a way. But then, when the going started getting rough, you know, and we are like needing some more skills, nonviolent communication skills was the bomb. Jonah's the main proprietor of, you know, he's just wonderful on the self-empathy, the other empathy, and the NVC. And I recommend that to anyone who's wanting to communicate more clearly and be able to be heard and be able to allow the other one to feel comfortable that they can talk. And we took to it like that. It was amazing. People had been saying, you got to check this out. You got to try this. And we're like, heck, we talk fine with each other. You know, we don't need it. But as soon as we got it, it just made such a big difference. And very briefly restated, we, you know, talk about the four steps. It was like super easy to break it down into these four little things. Buddhists like lists. And NVC came in list. So we're like, yeah, we're all over this. The first one is the non-judgmental observation. When someone's doing something, you're just like seeing it, experiencing it, you know, without any extra spin or bias from your side, you know. And the NVC negotiation, what you can be talking about is your feelings and needs. That's the main thing that you're always coming back to. They can be good feelings when your needs are being met. All of our universal human needs, when they're being met, we have good feelings. And it's wonderful to share those good feelings as well. When our needs are not being met, then we have feelings. And those are supposedly hard, you know, feelings, whatever. But they're, once we get used to them, we're like, oh, that's a feeling. I can acknowledge it. I can express it. It's not going to damage anyone. I'm getting angry. It doesn't mean instant destruction. You know, like we came from families, both of our families had anger problems in completely different ways. But that was a major one, is like to say, oh, you know, when I see you leaving all the dishes piled in the sink, you know, you make an observation, I feel a little angry because, and so you say your feeling, and it's a real feeling, it's not a pseudo feeling, you know, it's like, I feel neglected, because that's an assumption that the other is doing something, so it's not like a genuine feeling, I feel angry, it's something you actually feel in your body, which isn't, you know, like, we can't, you know, anyway. Ooh, okay. The need then comes up. It's like, oh, I have a need for a tidy, workable kitchen. And you make a request. Would you be willing to do your dishes? And you make it without any coercion. They can say yes or no. And that's your next negotiation point in the relationship. You know, that I've, but from my side, I'm feeling all good. You know, I've communicated my feelings, I've communicated my needs. And so, and I've done it in a respectful way for them. So that was a great tool. That was our first amazing thing. I mean, the first amazing thing that we had was the 6-in-1, which actually includes all of these. Because there was a certain culture from the household that I came from, that I grew up in, around how you deal with your feelings and how you communicate them. And it wasn't great. It wasn't, you know, but that was the culture that I grew up in. And she had her own. And they were at complete odds with one another. So we started to feel the perimeter of these inner demons, whatever, from our 6-in-1 practice. But then life happens and we're just going at it and we're doing kid raising, and I'm becoming a doctor of Chinese medicine, moving, housemaking, business making, and we don't have a lot of time, you know, for that path, negotiation, relationship. You know, it's like, I love this one, the grass is always greener where you water it. You can quote me on that one. I love that one. The grass is greener where you water it, where you do your work and where you put your love. That's going to be enriched. Booyah.
Indeed. So with the, so communication, yes, absolutely. Seems to be one of the number one challenging points in all relationships, I would say. So finding out a way to communicate effectively, whether that's nonviolent communication or another method that works in your life, it will probably be one of the best investments you ever make, because in order to be able to share our internal experience with another being in this realm, we use words. So mastering that skill at some point, or, you know, becoming semi-proficient, is highly advisable.
Yeah, so just go to NBC training. There's lots of resources. Even at the Chico Peace and Justice Center, mm-hmm. they have ongoing stuff and practice groups. It's so wonderful because you get a lot of empathy when people are practicing it. You get listened to. What? And you just like unload this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful.
So that's Nonviolent Communication, Marshall Rosenberg. You can find it online as well, to kind of, if you want to do a little bit of research on it before attending a workshop. And Jonah Richman also has a website where he leads workshops here in our community. And the Chico Peace and Justice Center is also a good connection for that. So, anything else that has sort of helped your relationship in more trying times?
Yeah, there was a dear friend, Tana Luvas, who we actually heard, had her number when we first came to Chico 15, 16 years ago. And she does counseling, and then she discovered this thing and had it really change her relationship, and just wanted to share it. And we went and we heard about it and felt it, and it felt beautiful. It was really beautiful. And comes from the work of Sue Johnson, who's a psychologist, a researcher, author. She has this book called Hold Me Tight.
I like when you say sensitive things and you use this really soft, higher pitched voice. It's kind of sweet.
Hold Me Tight is the name of her book. And what she discovered was bonding and the child needs the state of bonding in the early, you know, at early, it's all childhood, you know, there's this connection with the caregiver, and you feel the connection bodily. You know, it's like oxytocin from mom and baby, and that's the bond that we first experience, and how we learn about unconditional love. And babies are just like love generators. Even, you know, last Saturday market, this beautiful couple, they're like, here, hold this baby. I'm like, oh, thank you. And you just get something. They just fill you up. And we filled up our parents when we was this little googly, bubbly little love bundle. Turns out, even now that we're just big, mature, adult, separate, autonomous individuals, inside, we still need to feel that bond. So that's a big part of the coupling, the being in partnership. I offer that, you know, unconditionally to my beloved. And when we're in that, we just get reset into something beautiful and bodily, you know, it's like modulates your brain chemistry. And Sue Johnson discovered how people will recapitulate the bonding wounds or the inner demons that had prevented their bonding or been coping mechanisms for wonkiness in the bonding with the, you know, the whole 6-in-1 trip, and how to work those through bit by bit in relationship. And it was the most amazing work, most amazing psychological work. And the book is kind of a how-to thing, and we haven't finished it, so we're like, yeah, if we ever really need it, we can just go back to that and dig it out. But we got the message. It's like you really need to be goo-goo gaga in love once in a while, even if you're just a big old tough, independent, autonomous person.
So is part of it, like you were saying, identifying maybe some of those blocks to bonding? That, like, the psychological work of, like, looking at yourself and wondering what, like, kind of unpacking some of those past experiences that might find you pushing people away or making situations challenging because of old experiences you've had in life?
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
I also, like, had this thought coming to mind when you're sharing about having the, like, bonding relationship with your partner. Like there's... In your perspective, is there sort of like at different points in the relationship, you're like dating the person at the various age developments
uh-huh.
of their life? Like sometimes you're dating the child self that's like really needs to be comforted. And sometimes you're dating the adolescent self. It's like, get away from me. I just need some space.
That's right.
I kind of had like my own personal visualization of that in my own relationships.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Seeing how that's like, I could see some relevance to that.
And that's total 6-in-1. There's the bonding and the learning that happens at each phase in those developmental relationships. And there's always been bumps and snags. No one had the perfect childhood in those relationships. And people who have had really flawed childhoods, you know, my initial dear spiritual friend Fritz being one of them, compensated, overcame, forgave, you know, like that deep kind of body bonding forgiveness, and got from those relationships that weren't even there, you know, what they needed to feel whole and complete, lovable and capable of loving in the partnership. Yeah.
How vastly complex and wonderfully glorious this life experience is.
So grateful.
Thank you so much for what you've shared tonight, Adam. Do you have a song for us in closing?
Yeah, I just want to look for my hard-headed woman out there somewhere.
Tune in next Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned for Ecotopia up next. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rollo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rollo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rollo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m., and until 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, one who'll take me for myself. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I won't need nobody else. No, no, no. I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, headed woman, one who'll make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I know the rest of my life will be blessed. Yes, yes, yeah, yes. I know a lot of fancy dancers, people who can glide you on the floor. They move so smooth, but have no answers. Oh, when you ask what you come here for, I don't buy it.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia.
pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, Exploring Ecosystems, Environmental, Social, and Technological. I'm Susan Chudy.
And I'm Stephen Chudy. We'll be talking with local leaders tonight about what's happening in our region. Our first guest will be Caitlin Riley, director of the Chico Creek Nature Center.
And then we'll talk with Chico 350 leader Jake Davis. Chico 350 is a local organization associated with 350.org, an international organization focusing on efforts to control climate change.
And finally, Guillermo Mash has produced a recording of attendees at the Community Environmental Gathering a week ago. We'll hear about more from local people, their environmental concerns.